Spirit Radio Podcasts.
Now, this is Mental Health Week, actually, and tomorrow, the 10th of October, is World Mental Health Day. Now, our next guest hit a crisis in his mental health in his late teens and experienced a number of years in residential care, receiving treatment for his condition. Now, he's written two books about this experience, which give a great insight into what it's like for a service user in our mental health, in our healthcare, I should say, system. Now, he's continued to champion the importance of caring for our mental health. And in studio now, tell us more. I'm absolutely delighted to have Richard McGee. Richard, you're very welcome.
Thanks very much, Dom. Thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. Now, listen, Richard, would you remind us just a bit of your own story? That'd be great to hear.
Well, my own story starts when I was 14. I was okay in school, in primary school, but when I got to secondary school, I was okay in first year, but in second year I became very insecure and paranoid. And after Easter of second year, I ran away. In second year at Easter, I ran away from school. I was in a boarding school, Clongowes College, a posh school, Dom, down the country.
I know it well.
Yeah.
But I was in a Jesuit school as well.
Oh, Jesuit school, yeah. Gonzaga maybe, or Belvedere, yeah. Well, anyway, I was in Clongowes, and I got this notion, God, I can't even cope in a posh school. What will I be like if I go up to Dublin? I thought all the Dublin schools were rougher. And you know, the Clongowes was far rougher, Dom, because they used to call them Yorkies, big, rich and thick, you know, the lads, the country lads. But the bullying was unreal, but everybody got slagged. And I got slagged, and I had a nickname, Panic Man, at the time, which... they called me, because I said one day there was a fire alarm, I said, don't panic, and I tried to shake it off, but they latched onto it, and everyone had a nickname. One guy was known as a turkey, and another guy was he looked a bit feminine, and they used to call him, his name was Kevin, they used to call him Kavina. I mean, it was unbelievable, and I was very insecure. I ran away, and I thought my problems, Dom, were only, you know, I thought they were external. I thought the whole thing was, it was the place I was in, it wasn't me, I needed to get away. But I came home after the inter and I went to Sandford Park beside Gonzaga, and I still had problems as a 17-year-old. I was okay 15, 16. Then at 17, I had problems. I was very insecure again. I was in Irish College. Then I was assessed by John of God's, and I was taken into hospital for 18 days. But I was given no medication, Dom, not a tablet. And the doctor at the time said to me, your problems are mainly emotional, not chemical. You're not mentally ill. So they let me out. And then I went to college. I did my Leaving Cert a year later, and I went to college and I did business studies. I was only down in Carlow RTC, but it was very good because I had only got enough for arts in UCD or business studies in Rathmines, and I didn't want to go to either of those because in Rathmines they go to Jason's and play pool all day in Ranelagh. So I knew I'd go down, so I said I'd go to Carlow. So I went to Carlow.
I used to go to Jason's and play snooker. I know exactly what you're talking
about. Yes, yeah. You know yourself. You go in there. That's where Ken Doherty started.
That's right.
Maybe that's why he's so good, or was so, especially in 1997.
I was terrible.
I wasn't much better. Yeah. And I'd like to wish them all well in the Carriage Clubhouse this morning, speaking of pool, because there's a few of the lads, Declan and Liam, are going to play a game of pool against and one of the other clubhouses.
Oh, that's a
thing. There's the Carriage Clubhouse in Bray. It's a place where you can go and get your lunch, and the structure, and it's very good. It's down there now in the Solace Industrial Estate. It used to be New Dawn, and it's a tremendous place for some of us who haven't got work. And if you haven't got work, it gives you structure and purpose, and you do things like computers or gardening or stuff, and they do CV preparation. And Ronan Mulhern is the boss, and he's a lovely guy. And there's Martina Muller, a lovely gentle lady from Hungary, who's a staff member now, and Mary Marini, who's very kind and is very patient and always there for us, and they're a great crowd, and that's just a place to go if you haven't
Absolutely.
If you haven't got a job.
Big shout out, that's fantastic.
And big,
sorry,
shout out to them.
I completely distract you there. You were
no, you're fine, you're fine.
So anyway, you were in college, you were doing business studies, and what happened then?
I was in second year, and suddenly I got sick. I didn't know what was happening. What happened was, I came home from London. Three of us had gone to London after first year in college, and I came home and I I went, got a job in Garden Road Exchange Insurance. I came home from London before I got a job, but things were starting to slip. I was getting black periods, periods of blackness, but I thought no more of them and falling into small stretches of depression. But I thought nothing of it and went back to Carlow, and I was slowly descended the scales into schizophrenia throughout the whole year. And the problem was I was doing stand-up comedy, and because I had an audition for the Late Late Show that summer, and I fell apart. And then, of course, by the time the audition came, I was a nervous wreck. I just couldn't concentrate. I noticed things weren't funny anymore. I noticed I was slipping into downers. I noticed things, instead of seeing the glass half full, everything seemed not even half empty, completely empty. And it was a gradual descent. Concentration went on into my own little world. I failed all my exams bar one. Personnel management is all I passed in business studies. And it was just down, down, down. And I just thought, oh, this is normal. This happens to everybody. And then I kept saying to myself, snap out of it, Rich. You're in college. You're having a great time. Why don't you snap out of it? And I couldn't because it was chemical. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And so at that time, you say you were getting to a stage where you were becoming schizophrenic. So
yes, unfortunately.
When was that diagnosed and what happened?
Yeah, well, then I went. The amazing thing is I went on a J1 to America. And it was amazing, Dom. I went to a J1 to America, and I had one Librium tablet in my back pocket for New York City. I wouldn't mind if we'd gone to the countryside, but off to Manhattan, psychotic. And it was like this, as U2 sing, the city of blinding lights. Mm. It was unbelievable. I couldn't, I was absolutely freaked out, but
so
I went.
Sensory overload.
Sensory overload, hugely. I'm very sharp and very nervous, but I survived. But what I did was I went to a GP on the first day of the job. It was, look, we were in a country club in Westchester County, and I just said to the boss, and to my two mates, Niall and Eddie, I said, I can't work, lads. They didn't know what was wrong. They said, could you not wait lunchtime? I was 21, they were only nearly 20, and they didn't understand mental illness, and they didn't know what to do. So I went off walking, and I found a place called Metro Med, walk-in medical care. It was about 3 miles. It was a miracle I found it, and you didn't need an appointment. I went in, spoke to a little Jewish doctor, a lovely man called Dr. John Eric Jacoby, and he gave me antidepressants, and I coped for 20 weeks. But when I came home, I was home 2 weeks, and I had to go down to see Tom Brennan in Clonmara. A lovely doctor, but he got my diagnosis wrong the first time, but a very, very good professional doctor, and he knew I had schizophrenia, and then hospital, and then the rest is history, Burton Hall, and then many years in the system trying to get well, the struggle to recover, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And let's talk about the system itself. I mean, you mentioned just before we went on air that in 2006 there was a document, I can't remember the name of it now.
A Vision for Change.
A Vision for Change.
A Vision for Change.
Talk to me about this.
Well,
your experience.
It's the government policy document to help people with mental health, and there were different parts of it, like experts by experience to get people to who have the illness to be responsible for their own care up to a point, and that for their, especially their own aftercare. And the two criticisms I have of A Vision for Change are the government has not done enough at all. The government has done very little to promote A Vision for Change, because the main proponent of it was the Job Shadow Initiative, which was to get people with mental health difficulties back working 1 or 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. 1 day a week. And the thing is, Dom, the reason being that we can only earn €120 on top of our disability. After that, your disability is proportionately moved down. For every tenner you earn, you lose a tenner. But only for the Carriages Clubhouse, a lot of people would be at a loss in Bray, in this area. And the blessing is you can go to it from Dublin to Bray. And there are a few of them around the city. But the Job Shadow Initiative was never implemented properly. There was a pilot scheme rolled out 2 years ago by Kathleen Lynch, the then Minister for Mental Health, and it only went around Cork, and then it failed. But the Job Shadow Initiative was to get people back shadowing, if you know what I mean, Dom, somebody in a job for maybe half a day a week. And just to very briefly tell you, the reasoning being that, say, an inverted commas well person, professional person, might want half a day off on a Friday to go with their family and kids and have an extended weekend, and we could come in and do the job for them, for a third of the cost. And it won't happen in all jobs, but in certain jobs, retail, maybe some people know things about construction, horticulture, restaurant work, things like that. We can work. A lot of us recover. And a lot of people with mental health difficulties have qualifications, Dom.
Yeah.
And because they recover and they do things. Over 65% of people with this illness recover. But they were classed as stupid by people, were feared as violent and dangerous, which is rubbish. Only hebephrenics are dangerous. That's a different form of the illness. So the job shadowness, to cut a long story short, was to get us back working, and it never happened, and they never implemented it. And lastly, to say, I feel that the government should have a policy where at least one or two people in every company should have a mental health difficulty and be employed by the company, just to round things up, to balance things. Because it's like the analogy of somebody from a very poor area. The CV goes in the bin, and it's the same with people with the illness, with mental illness, particularly schizophrenia and sometimes depression. Sometimes people with depression cope better, but people with schizophrenia, they, when they're in the early stage, they can't work. But when they recover, they can work. And it's to give us purpose, Dom. Purpose. It's a huge word for people who need help with the illness.
Yeah. And you talk about having, you know, goals and purpose. And this has got to be making it much worse not to have the outside opportunity. But what would you like to see change? I mean, how does this get implemented at a government level?
Well, I'd like the government to make a to implement a policy whereby people with mental health difficulties can work, and that they should be enforced, the job shadow issue, and bring it into law. It hasn't been ratified. It's 11 years since it came out, and it hasn't been ratified into law. It should be a law that employers have to take two or three people with a mental health difficulty. They don't have things to fear. It's a fact, it's a well-known fact that people with mental health difficulties will work harder than a lot of well people in a job. And I'm talking about people who've recovered, you know,
who will be very committed.
Yeah, because they know they only have this chance. And if they blow it, then they're not going to get anything else, or they mightn't get another chance. Whereas some well people feel, oh, I'm bored with this job, I want to do something else, you know.
It's funny, though, because we hear a lot of talk about those with you know, physical disabilities not being given much priority either. It seems that the big focus is more on easy social issues than on actually trying to tackle these things, which is pretty disappointing.
Well, it's true. And also, as when I said to News Talk 106, when I was talking to them, there's this idea that people with the illness can't work, and there's this idea that that all you have to do with your mental health, there's the talk of mental health, and some celebrities, I won't name anybody, but some celebrities have given this idea that, you know, oh, with mental health in the early stage, all you have to do is do your meditation or mindfulness. When you get over the worst of it, after 7 or 8 years or 5 or 6 years, or luckily with the new drugs, clozapine, olanzapine and Abilify, aripiprazole, that one, now you can get over the illness in 6 or 7 years if you take your meds and don't mess around with street drugs or drink too much alcohol, get exercise, rest and sleep, all these things, then you can do. But there was this idea in the early years that, oh, people with mental health just need to do mindfulness. People with acute mental illness need medication for a long time, and then when they are well, then mindfulness, because they do mindfulness down in the Martina does it in the Carders Clubhouse, and it's very beneficial for some of the gang. And you know, all the people in the Carders Clubhouse are well, you know, they're not in mental distress, and a lot of them can work. A lot of them are nervous about working, but you know, I did it in America for 20 weeks in a heap, really unwell. So it's amazing the power of the human spirit.
Yeah, well, indeed. And we can rise above these things. I mean, you mentioned, we were talking about this off air, and I just have to ask you, because it's such a hot issue. We talk about these issues that governments are pushing. There's a huge push to legalise street drugs, particularly cannabis. And you were saying you think this is a particularly dangerous thing to do, weren't you?
To be very honest with you, I spoke about it in my book, and the last book I wrote. If you get 10 kids, it doesn't matter what area, be it Fox Rock or Finglas, it doesn't matter. You get 10 of them out and they're all going mad, 16, 17, having a ball, thinking they're great. At least two of them will end up with schizophrenia, and one other will end up with either bipolar depression or whatever. And the other 7 may get away with it. And it might not cause brain damage. Long term, it can cause brain damage if you take a lot of it, minor brain damage. But it's not even that. It's the fact that it is psychosis inducing. And there are many people who will never have an illness until they take it. And as a girl I knew who worked with me in Grade Or Catering said, her brother took it, and he was all party and having a great time. And then after about a year on it, he sat in a chair for 3 years saying, what's wrong with me? And anyone who inflicts schizophrenia on themselves is a fool. It's hard enough to to cope, you know, when you get it by just by nature. But when it's an organic brain disease, but to inflict it on yourself is really stupid, and cannabis should not be legalized. People go on about, oh yeah, it's not dangerous, it's not a gateway drug. It's a gateway drug for one thing. It leads to harder drugs, you get bored of it. It's dangerous. It causes people psychosis, and it causes especially anyone with a mental health difficulty smoking cannabis is playing with more than fire. They're playing with a grenade, you know. It's lethal.
Well, I mean, from your personal experience as well, Richard, I'm sure you've had plenty of friends who've used it, you know, probably to cope as well and so on. Probably,
yeah. A lot of people with no predisposition will get away with it. They will get away with it for long. But in the long term, a few of my mates who took a bit here and a bit there over the years, but they didn't go mad. And maybe, you know, once every couple of weeks, but even that's stupid. But they did it. But I've one or two particular mates. One mate in particular who's so balanced and so well that he wouldn't get a problem. But still, in all,
you're playing with fire.
Because some people will end up with the illness. Why dice with it? You know, if there is a chance you'll get schizophrenia. Because the thing is, Dom, you can't just pull out a schizophrenia when you get it. When I got the illness and I was in college in Carlo, the lads just said, come on down for a pint, and I kept saying, snap out of it, you should be having a great time, you're in college, you know. And then I couldn't snap out of it, and the lads were trying to bring me down for a drink to cheer me up. And even alcohol was like sticking spears in my head, you know. So it was just one of those. Cannabis really is an out for me, particularly after I mentioned to you with the delusion I had as well.
Well, indeed,
thinking I harmed myself with it, you know, taking a couple of pulls of it.
Yeah.
So I won't be smoking it again anyway, Dom.
You won't be. Well, you've properly put yourself off it, but there you go. But Richard, it's a real pleasure to talk to you, and you've got two books, and I want to just mention them.
Yeah, I wrote a little book called The Mood Swings first, Dom. I wrote it about 8 years ago. It's about four of us who tried to get this band off the ground, and it was hilarious. We were all service users, and we were living in a house in Whitefield Road, a John of God's house in in Ballybrack, in Loughlinstown, near Ballybrack, and we had this band, and Mick was a big Manchester United fan, and we'd be practicing for, and I'm a Liverpool fan for my sins. But we used to be practicing at night, and we'd barely get the practice going when Donald hit the drums too hard, or the neighbours being given out, and then Mick would come in, Vinny was our guitarist, God rest him. And the reason I wrote the book was they're all dead.
Oh, wow.
The three of them committed suicide, and the manager was Mick Barris. He didn't commit suicide, he just died of natural causes. But just to cut a long story short, we tried to get a few auditions, and we were told that we'd get a gig in the Purty Kitchen in Dunleary. So we arrived with all the gear and we set up and everything, and we were brutal. Donald hit the drums. Donald broke the drumstick on the second beat. We couldn't find Vinny, and we found him in Dunleary. He was so nervous, he was drunk, and when we found him, we're going to rock the place, he said. I said, we're in band jacks now, Vinny, we're not rocking any place. And then very quickly to finish, we went in, we did the audition, and your man Mick Barris had told his wife, her Stella, he said, you know, I'll get £100 for this. And so anyway, we didn't get £100, we got a tenner. And then Mick said, well, that's a tenner for me. We said, no way, Mick, no way. There's no way you're in the tenner. It's all down the, just split five ways. So we all got £2 at the time.
£2.
And Mick went home to Stella with the £2.
With the £2. Well, at least it wasn't nothing.
It wasn't nothing, yeah. Down from 100, a 50th of what he had promised.
Yeah, indeed. And you have another book, Where Were You, Jesus?
Where Were You, Jesus? My own personal story. And I got it published by Austin Macaulay in London about 3 years ago, two years ago. Oh, and I have a load of friends, John Moore, Rob Cairn, Jody Walsh, great mates of mine who support me and help me. And I also want to thank all the service users, and particularly Declan Kavanagh and Anthony Doyle in the Troy Social Club in Dalkey, which does tremendous work for service users. And they gave me a launch. And also the Cardiff Clubhouse very kindly, Mary Marini organised it, and she was great. She gave me a launch as well. And I've sold, Keith Cruz, a friend of mine, and I sold 82 books on the metals in Dunleary in August, and we also sold, I sold about another 600, about 100 in bookshops, and about another 400 between friends and family. So I've sold nearly 700. I'm thrilled, you know.
That's great. And so I'm sure we can look those books up, can't we?
I will. And if you can't, I'll bring them. I have very few copies of The Mood Swings, but I'll get a couple. Oh, yeah. I'll drop one in.
We'll give a plug to those as well, Richard.
The Mood Swings was self-published. And Where Were You, Jesus, is my book. You can get it. I know I'll have to get off the air now and be finished. You can get it in any Dunleary Ratdown library, and you can get it in Dubray Books in Stillorgan, Dunleary or Bray, and it's in Alan Hanna's in Ratmines, and a few in W.H. Smith as well in town.
Well, it's actually well distributed. My goodness.
Thank you very much.
You've got it going on there. Great interview as a mental health social worker. This is from Frank Brown. I see in my work how cannabis is bad news for many. So there's just a comment there.
That's very kind. Good man, Frank. That's right. Thanks very much.
Well, Richard, we'll probably have to leave it there. I could talk to you all day.
You're very good. We better not. You're very good to give me the time, Dom.
No,
you're very kind.
It's an absolute pleasure. We're Richard McGee. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks a million, Dom.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.